At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast lore behind the Mass Effect games. Welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. This is your host, Tom, or Robots, and I'm here with Sam, my good buddy, the all-knowing of the Mass Effect lore. I know you hate it when I raise the stakes
I really do.
Because the internet likes to argue about every little nitpicky detail. But welcome back to the show. We are having a very special Valentine's Day episode. Sam, we have some guests here today. What is going on?
That's right. So you know how we've done the specials on medicine, on music, on other things. Well, it's almost Valentine's Day. This episode should be coming out pretty close to Valentine's Day. So we figured, why don't we invite some of the romance experts that we know onto the show to help dissect the romance of Mass Effect?
Yeah. So who's joining us?
Genesis and Vervada. I think we should probably let them introduce themselves, but you may recognize their name from the show Two Girls, One Ship.
Awesome. Welcome to the show, Jen and Vervada. How's it going? Let's start with Jen. Jen, you've been on the show a bunch as a patron guest and other things, but welcome back. How's it going?
Thank you. I've been on almost 2 years worth of Patreon chats now, and I was on the pro Caden perspective episode talking about my love affair with Caden Alenko.
That's true. Yeah. Welcome back. And then Vervada, your partner in romance. A partner in all things, including romance. Vervada, welcome. How's it going?
Hi, it's Vervada, one of the love experts. I just keep thinking of Frozen trolls when you were like the romance experts. Guess we're trolls.
Nice. But
yeah, I was once a patron a long time ago, and your podcast is what brought us together. Actually, that's where we met.
Oh, well, that's this show's gonna be all about warm fuzzies today.
You're a matchmaker.
Yeah, bringing people together, all sorts of fun things. Well, welcome back to the show. I'm excited to get into seeing your perspective. We've talked about some of the romantic stuff on and off as we get through different characters and relationships and things like that, and some of the patron chats. But we're going to get your expertise specifically. And Sam, I know you, I'll have to hand it off to you. You're the one who usually handles all the show notes, puts everything together. So if you're listening for the first time, I'm kind of the host guy. Sam's more of the topic expert. Sam, where do we want to start off with our interview with them?
Well, I figure, you know, just like most of the lore topics where we start broad and then kind of narrow in, I feel like that's what we should do today. So why don't we start broad? And I have a list of questions for our romance experts here who are coincidentally also huge Mass Effect fans. And I wanted to ask both Genesis and Vervada, how does Mass Effect approach romance?
It's a very broad one. Who wants to take this?
So on our show, I'm the one who doesn't shy away from exploring the fun of physical connection. And so my brain generally goes to the physical side of things. So when I read this question, I thought about, like, okay, how does Mass Effect approach romance and went from a gameplay standpoint. And so I kind of think that that's where I'll start with, because V is the one who handles the actual lovey romance side of things. So she'd be more apt to answer that question. But from a gameplay standpoint specifically, it was really one of the first games where it was all dialogue based. It was no longer the system of give gift, raise approval, get spouse, like we used to see in Stardew Valley and things like that, or older games where gift giving was the primary form of raising an approval level.
Yeah,
it was kind of even like that in Skyrim, right? I mean, you would do maybe like a small little quest for someone, but then you'd ultimately give them the Ring of Mara, and then you can marry them. So it's kind of like that was much more the old style, you're saying.
Right. There was that. And there wasn't a whole bunch of aspects of like there was the romance specific item that you would give and the dialogue. I mean, maybe there'd be like a flirty line or two, but sometimes you didn't even need to have those conversations. You would just present them with romance gift.
So, Jen, would you say that the Mass Effect style is I mean, everything's video gamey on some level, but it's a little bit more in line with reality. Like you actually talk with a person, you get to know them, you find out if you have similarities, and then that furthers your relationship through those details.
Oh, absolutely. It's a lot more realistic. If you're not compatible with a character, you're not going to want to romance them to begin with. And then if your decisions aren't compatible with who they are, they're not going to want to romance you. Samara comes to mind. If you go to Renegade on your playthrough, Samara's not going to want anything to do with you. She flat out says, I wish that I wasn't bound to you. I would rather kill you right now.
Yeah. So you're
obviously
saying
she's not going to be a romance.
So you're saying no matter how many gifts I give somebody, it doesn't mean they're going to fall in love with me.
Not the type of person you want to, quote, quote, fall in love with you.
Right.
I think all these Twitch sims should probably take note right now. And oh, man. You can save your money because as much as I love you.
Oh, is that what's happening? Because nobody's sending me stuff. But everyone's sending Sam stuff. I mean, all right.
That's no, cool. I get like enough for a few cups of coffee every month. But no, I was just joking.
Awesome. Vervada, I would love to hear your perspective because I know the two of you kind of come at things from different directions.
Yes. So my mind obviously immediately went narrative when it comes to the romances. That's where I like to live anyway, is the narrative. But for it actually changed a little bit from the Mass Effect trilogy to Mass Effect Andromeda. But overall, the way that the romances really work is game mechanics wise, they don't change your game. Like you don't have repercussions for who you're romancing, but you find out a lot more personal lore and things about the character that you're romancing that otherwise you would not find out if you did not romance them. That's something that sometimes could be a critique depending on the game, but usually that's pretty specific to BioWare up until very recently, where parts of a character were really locked behind that romance, quote unquote, side quest. But because you have so many more interactions with them and they have unique dialogue for that, it makes it feel like it impacts your game, even if it doesn't actually impact the overarching narrative and different missions and stuff, because it does feel different when you're going into a quest and like, say you're a femshep and you've romanced Garrus and he has cute little banter with everyone about your relationship as you're running around. Like that adds something to the story, and that's not that common in games before Mass Effect happened. And then when we have Mass Effect Andromeda, the romances, because previously it was really just like you could lock in with one person, you couldn't have flings or just sex or no sex at all. Like you had a very specific path that the romance followed, but Andromeda made it so that you could have those more casual relationships, or you could have a monogamous relationship. They still didn't get into like polyamory or anything like that quite yet, but hopefully maybe Mass Effect 4, who knows? Like I'm all for having so many more options, but I thought that was really cool because it really it just, I don't know, it just adds so much to the game. That's what everyone, we've said this so many times. If someone finds out you played Mass Effect, the first question someone asks is, who did you romance? That's like the most important question, I feel like, over what ending did you pick, or were you Paragon or Renegade? They want to know who you romanced.
Yeah. Do you think that question comes up in particular because these games were early and in developing that in a way that it actually felt real? And so it became a unique thing to talk about with these games? Or do you think that they did it not only first, but also in a way where it just feels that important to your gameplay?
I think it's because of the narrative side of it. I mean, obviously the physical cutscenes, you don't get an actual visual sex scene with every romance, because as much as I would have liked to see a Turian human relationship, maybe it was probably not something they could animate realistically back then, or they couldn't spend the money on that. Who knows? But I think the reason it impacts us so much is because of the dedication and time they put into writing those characters so well. It wasn't like every game before where you could have, like, take Skyrim, for instance, which came out around the same time the trilogy was coming out in 2010. Their romances were just your followers, like, that you could, you know, give your stuff to and they'd follow you around, and then you could build them a house and adopt a kid. But it had no impact whatsoever. You didn't really have any special dialogue outside of proposing to them and maybe them calling you sweetheart or something.
Right. So yeah, when you return home and they greet you, that sort of thing.
Yeah, but that was it. Like, it didn't really feel like it mattered the way it feels like it matters when you pray with Thane as he's dying, because it's so different from when you've not romanced him. It's still very touching, but it feels so much more personal in that scene. And then when it calls back to it in the Citadel DLC, and you have these videos he recorded for you because he knew he was dying and he wanted to give you some last messages. And he even visits you as like a ghost, kind of, if you romanced him before you get back on the Normandy. And those scenes like are so impactful because you feel like you fell in love with Thane because you're playing an RPG. Like, you are Shepard. It's a very personal choice to pick who you're romancing. So, I mean, we're all human. We all have emotional connections. Like, we're social animals. So we're pre-designed to, like, pack bond with anything, you know? Now, and that it now, really helps. Sorry.
I was going to say that is one side of the coin, but the other is rejection. And Genesis had mentioned Samara. And even if you are Paragon, you do get rejected by Samara at pretty much every turn until you get to the very end. Do you think that, and this question's for either of you, but do you think that Mass Effect romances needed more rejection to make it feel more real? Because in other games I've played since then, where romance is an aspect, Cyberpunk or Baldur's Gate, there is the very real chance that even though you may want to romance this person, this character does not want to romance you.
Yeah, I think that they tried that in Mass Effect 1 and they didn't get it right. So then they shied away from it. The confrontation scene, if you're flirting with Liara and either Caden or Ashley, in my opinion, they got that scene very wrong. And I felt like they didn't want to broach another rejection / confrontation scene. It's not good.
Yeah, it doesn't feel good. It doesn't, like, those moments in games don't make you go, oh, I want to play more of this.
No, however,
no, not,
I believe,
not so much.
I was going to say, I believe that it adds a level of realism. Like, if you know, that tension that you feel in a real life romance when you're just starting to get to know someone and you don't want to, like, say anything wrong, you don't want to do anything wrong, you don't want to look uncool, right? I feel like
you put on a fake version of yourself so that when the relationships actually get serious, now you hate each other because you were fake the whole time. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. That way you can unbuckle your pants, you know, fart as much as you want. Yeah. I'm not speaking for myself here at all. But no, that's what I'm saying. Like, the rejection aspect, I feel like it made the culmination of romances more rewarding.
And I wasn't saying that the rejection was a bad thing. I liked that that was going to happen. It's just the way that they handled the confrontation scene of the honestly douchey line of, I love it when women fight over me. That's the part of the scene that I didn't like.
Oh, man. Yeah, that is a douchey line for sure.
I agree with Sam, though, that I think there should be some rejection because it does add realism, and also it adds consequences to your actions, which not all games have, because it, you know, you should have some consequences to your actions. That's what I like about the morality system, and they changed it a little bit. Like, I mean, I know we're talking about Mass Effect, but BioWare made that and Dragon Age, and I think they were a little bit more daring with how they approached that morality system and that consequences to your actions bit with Dragon Age games versus Mass Effect games. There's not as many chances for rejection in Mass Effect, and it does make it feel like there's some stakes, but I also see why people maybe wouldn't want rejection. That's a critique I've seen for Baldur's Gate, for instance, because especially for Astarion, who rejects pretty much everyone who asks him to romance him, like, there, I don't want that. I want to be able to have sex with whoever. And I guess there's a place for that, you know, but I personally like it when it feels like the characters have their own agency, because that's how it makes it feel real.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's something actually playing through the logical ramifications of your decisions and ways that feel real is very important. I do know, however, that from a game developer standpoint, for the last 15 years or so, different studios have been streamlining their RPGs. They've been cutting off like the rough edges. This is something Bethesda is very well known for. If you watch the trajectory from like Morrowind to Oblivion to Fallout 3 to Skyrim, everything gets simplified and kind of almost, in a lot of people's opinions, overly simplified. And then Fallout 4 and then Starfield, they trim off these edges that they know don't necessarily make the game as palatable or fun for a broad audience. And of course, there are going to be people out there who are like, oh, well, why can't I just romance who I want to romance? Because because they treat it like a video game. This is a goal. This is an achievement. I want to get the achievement. What buttons do I have to press in what order to get that achievement, right? But that goes directly against and is counter to that feeling of actually role-playing a character in a world that feels real. And how those two things balance is tricky. So that's why I bring up the question of like, is that good, or is a little bit of it good? At what point does it go too far, you know?
Let me present this as kind of a Mass Effect setting where I believe that there needed to be more consequences, because, okay, for example, if you decide that you want to sabotage the genophage cure, why on earth should some of the more heroic companions that you're with, why should they agree to romance you just because you kept picking the Paragon dialogue options with them?
Or even continue working with you if it's an egregious enough thing that they stand directly against. Like, the realistic thing would be, some people might go, hey man, I know we're in this for like good reasons, but I can't get with these decisions. I need to leave. You know? Like, it could go that far.
Right. Or better yet, Mass Effect 1, Ashley, if you let the Rachni Queen go, there should be a very real chance that she is not going to proceed any further in a romance with you, because she's already expressed her extreme distrust of aliens, right? And this is before you've been able to spend a lot of time with her and mold and kind of steer her toward a less xenophobic route. So realistically, you know, your decisions outside of the romance arc, I think, should have impacted the romance arcs more in Mass Effect.
Do you two agree
Definitely.
With that?
Definitely. And I,
Jen, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think they started that a little bit. The first one that came to mind was, if you don't go with Tally the way that she wants you to when it comes to her father's trial, she won't romance you. If you don't allow Jack the room to grow on her own and you take her up on an offer for a one night stand, she will no longer romance you. There are small little nuggets of where, if you don't follow down, if you choose, I guess it is kind of choosing the wrong options for them will make them reject you, but at least there's a little bit of that.
Yeah. Do you think that's enough? Is it just the right amount so far, or would you like more of that? in like future releases? It's a tough question.
I definitely think consequences needs to be a thing. Decisions outside of specific, like decisions that I make regarding Miranda should affect Jack, you know, in cases like that. And they can, but there needs to be a little bit more of it to make it a fully in-depth romance that has consequences in more than just the relationship.
Perhaps we should put this in context of when each game came out, though, right? Because it was 2007 when Mass Effect 1 came out. And at that time, Mass Effect was still considered kind of a trailblazer and including romance in video games, right? So I wanted to pivot and kind of ask, how did romanticism change in each of the games, 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to Andromeda?
For me, honestly, from a gameplay standpoint, I think Andromeda did it best. I loved the fact that I could build friendships and relationships and have very high positive views. But the person that I wanted to romance, there were very specific and clear marked dialogues with a little heart that said, this is me flirting with you. And sometimes it was a little too ambiguous in the OG trilogy of whether or not that was a flirt dialogue or whether that was a, I'm just really here for you because you need a friend in this moment. So I think I liked the way that Andromeda did it.
Wait, but that same thing is very realistic in real life. Sometimes somebody says, hey, you know, I know you're going through some tough times. I'm here for you if you need me. And that could mean, hey, I'm your friend. Let me know if you need help. But that could also mean, hey, I'd really like to get closer to you. You know, like sometimes that stuff is ambiguous in real life. I'm not saying that it necessarily should or shouldn't have been shown with little icons or whatever, but that does lend a certain amount of reality to it if it is vague. Is that not fun from a gameplay standpoint?
From a gameplay standpoint, since I'm not the one choosing my tone and the way that the words are delivered, it's very, I think in a video game, I would prefer it to be that way where it's a lot more clear because there is a huge difference between, you know, Sam, I love you, or Sam, I love you. Those are very different tones. And the way that I say those things is going to come across very differently. But you know, just it, so having it from a gameplay where you can pick and choose, I'm saying this with a flirty tone or I'm saying this with a friendly tone.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because you can't read tone in text very easily. There are things you can do to try to make it more obvious, but it is by nature, ambiguous, right? So I think that's a great point because that's why we use emojis on internet chats and things like that, is in order to say like, oh, this is a friendly face. I'm saying something kind of fun, or, oh, this is the, you know, that my tears are popping out of my eyes because this is a little bit ridiculous and ironic or whatever, right? Like we're trying to add tone into our text using visuals, and that's exactly what they're doing there, right?
It's still a game. Like it's not real. When we both say we want it to feel more real, it's in terms of like the characterization of the NPCs, not necessarily the player character and how they're interacting, because you only have your sense of sight with a video game and, you know, some auditory stuff. But for the most part, the way you're interacting with the world is what you're looking at. And that's like, there's this debate I saw on Twitter about the new Resident Evil 4 with all the yellow crates and things, like, oh, it's too obvious that those are the interactive, like the crates that you can interact with. Why would they paint them yellow? And it's like, there's this with game developers, this fine line between how do we make it intuitive and feel not like a game, but also make it so players can navigate the world and understand where they can and can't go, what they can and can't say. And I think, I mean, it is ambiguous without the so-called emojis of, is this a flirt dialogue or not? I really feel like Andromeda got it best with that. But for what we were talking about before, they also did remove the morality system completely. So your romances and your friendships and everything is not impacted by your choices morally at all. So they kind of backpedaled. That's why for me, BioWare's top romance system is a mix between Dragon Age 2 and Dragon Age Inquisition. I loved the friend rival bit, and I also love that your real world decisions as Inquisitor impact your approval levels, which impact who you can and can't romance and who is your ally or not. I think I wish that could have been more in Mass Effect, but also that came before. Like they're still learning.
So I feel like for Mass Effect 1, there was, and I know, I'm sure that there's a name for this trope, right? But in Mass Effect 1, you spend the entirety of the game's length basically developing the romance with whoever you're going to romance. And then it culminates at the end, and then that's it. So you get all of this time kind of courting each other and flirting with each other, but not actually any time being boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever you want to label it. And the same thing kind of happens in Mass Effect 2. And then the same kind of format happens in Mass Effect 3, unless it's someone you romanced in 2 or 1, right? Have you run into many games where this is not the case, where you actually do get a decent amount of time being someone's partner and developing the relationship after the, you know, the ultimate kiss moment? You know what I mean?
I mean, a little bit in Andromeda. Because you can have your first casual hookup with somebody right in the beginning, and then you can then pursue a romance of like, wow, I'd actually like to date you after this. And then you have a secondary culmination scene at the end of the game. Baldur's Gate 3 is doing that right now, where you can date somebody a couple of times, and still be in a relationship after your Act 3 scene. Other video games that do that. Can you think of any right now?
Not really in an RPG. I was going to say with Andromeda, it depends on who you're romancing. Some people are available to you sooner than others. It really depends on the person. And also some people don't actually get a culmination scene other than like you see them, like for Vetra, for instance, you kiss her. But once again, we can't show Turians having sex with humans. So you get to climb a cliff with her and look at the sunset or sunrise. I can't remember which one it is.
It's so metaphorical. It. Climb the mountain, look at the sunrise.
Yeah, and you get a cute kiss.
That's kind of what I'm saying. Like, after that, how much does that romance actually develop? How much does the relationship develop, or is it just like throwaway ambient lines here and there?
It's kind of just that. And that's part of that's something that Jen and I always say is we wish there would be even an established relationship, like something that you go into the game and maybe it's already existed. And that's hard though with an RPG though. Like the first game that came to mind about, oh, you see the relationship change over the course of the games is Uncharted, but that's not an RPG. That's a predetermined relationship between Nate and his wife, Elena, or future wife, and then kind of ex-wife, and then they kind of get back together. But anyway, like even in Mass Effect, like if you romance Garrus in Mass Effect 2 and then romance him again in Mass Effect 3, or Kaidan, who you could romance back in Mass Effect 1, it doesn't necessarily feel like you've had all that time with them, because Kaidan's gone for all of Mass Effect 2, and Garrus, even if you've, it's only been what, like 6 months between 2 and 3, and when you first find him again and you guys don't act like you're together, it's very, very awkward. And then later you find him obviously by the guns doing his calibrations, and he's like, so are we still like a thing? So it's so weird. You're like, so was it just a black hole the last 6 months? I mean, I guess, you know, Shepard was in prison, but whatever, you know, like it doesn't seem like they had a long distance thing going. So it still doesn't feel very stretched out over games the way that I wish it could have been, because there's always these breaks no matter who you were with.
And it did kind of feel like they were going that route with the Vermeier survivor on Horizon, because that expressed a certain level of continuity where, you know, you meet up, let's say you're like me and you romanced Ashley in Mass Effect 1, but then you meet up with her in Mass Effect 2 on Horizon. And this is kind of leading into another point that I wanted to bring up, which is that a lot of compelling romantic relationships are often strained at times by circumstance or by each other or any number of things. I think that Mass Effect showed this very well during the Horizon scene. If you had romanced Caden or Ashley, with Ashley saying, you know, look, I'm no fan of aliens, but Cerberus is a terrorist organization, and this is way over the line. And you finally run into a scenario where, you know what, like, you did overstep a line. They're not going to approve of everything you do. And Caden's scene is a little bit more harsh, but outside of the Horizon scenes, you know, is there a lot of this where the romantic relationship in Mass Effect is strained?
I think, yeah, strained relationships. I don't know. This is a you question, babe.
Well, I mean, so Garrus is your ride or die no matter what. Like, he doesn't care whether you're a renegade or paragon, right? And then Liara is just gone because she's the shadow broker now. And she becomes aged, you know, she's matured into her violence from that. It doesn't really feel like anyone else is objecting to you being forced to work with Cerberus, because honestly, that's what happened. You know, it's not like you had a choice being brought back to life by them. But I do like the tension that they had in that Horizon scene. There was like a little bit added. It wasn't too much more if you had romanced them versus if you were just their friend, but you get a couple extra lines of dialogue and then those letters that they send you, which you can find on YouTube being read by their voice actors, which was great. But I mean, I like that. I think it's good. That to me isn't like a necessarily a romance specific thing. It does have a slightly bit added there for the romance. But for me, it's just the fact that your choices, or not choices, I guess, with Cerberus, but like your companions reacting to how you're going through the world is always going to be a win for me. And I especially like it when they call you out. I think that's one of the reasons why with Dragon Age 2, we like the rival romances so much, because you challenge your companion in their beliefs versus the friendship route is more of an enabler. You're just kind of going along with whatever they're already doing. And I like that your companions can do that to you. That's not like it really affects the game, though. Like, you kind of have to work with Cerberus for a little bit, but ultimately it does feel like they have their own opinion on what's going on. And it is a consequence. It feels like a consequence, even though that's just how it's supposed to work. They're not supposed to be in Mass Effect 2.
Sam, do you have any other questions on this specific one? Because I see where the next question is in the notes. And just...
Yeah, you want to handle that one, Tom?
So we've been have some really interesting and dynamic thoughts on the way romance is done and things that could be improved or changed or whatever. But before we get to the mid-break, why don't we get to the sex scenes, because that's part of romance. And how would you rank them from top to bottom, as Sam has here in the notes? Jen, I feel like this is your realm.
It is my realm. And so there are 25 individual sex scenes, not counting variations between male and female characters. So there's no way that I'm going to list out all 25.
Sure. Okay. So do you have some that definitely go at the top and some that definitely go at the bottom? Because those are the most interesting ones.
Yeah. Give us your tops and bottoms, Jen.
Thanks, Sam. Hot take. My least favorite physical scenes are Garrus's for his romance culmination scenes. I am a ride or die for Garrus. I absolutely love him, but they don't give us anything. A forehead head bump is not enough for me to feel happy.
you say that's not pushing the buttons in the right places, I guess, right? Like...
No, it's the same act that my cat does in the morning to get me out of bed to feed her, is through head bumps. And I'm
Garrus
like,
kind of looks like a cat.
He does look like a kitty, a burrito kitties. Yeah. But spiciest scene out of the OG trilogy, Jack's renegade option is poof. Wow. It's definitely one that I think you should experience and then go reload the save and then not you know, re-traumatize her. But it's a good, fun scene to watch. Middle of the line, I'd say I was pretty happy with Liara in Mass Effect 1. That was a good one. It showed biotics in the bedroom, which I was not expecting at all. And you get side boob. Side boob's always fun.
Nice. Any others come to mind?
Which one's the most
Miranda?
Meh?
The most meh?
The most average. Not like the most disappointing, not the best.
But just kind of like, well, that happened. Cool.
Yeah. Perhaps one you can barely remember.
Oh, I mean, no, I can remember them all, but the right in the middle, it either goes, we are going full on, or we're only going to give you a hint of what the next scene looks like. So for the romances that are like hints only, Steve Cortez, Tally, Garrus,
Allers,
Sane, Allers, Kelly Chambers, there's Samantha Trainor. So those ones are all a little bit on the lower end because there's not enough in the scene for me. If I'm going to be watching a culmination scene, let me see things culminate.
Udina. Oh, wait.
Bravada, how do you feel about these scenes? Which one's the top? Which one's the bottom? Which one's...
We're forgetting about Andromeda, which is what I was thinking of. But for me, I don't mind the head bump so much because it's super cute with Garrus. But I think there's plenty of good ones. None of the people I romanced, unfortunately, were the good ones. But I've seen lots of scenes in the course of our work on the podcast. And the one that I think people like, but I think is really stupid, mainly because I don't like her, is PB. And when you have sex with her in the escape pod with the gravity off, first of all, how does that work? Like, you need gravity.
Hasn't NASA said that you... Yeah, I was going to say, hasn't NASA said that it couldn't work?
Yeah, you need gravity to do movements like that. Some kind of opposite force and all that.
Yeah,
anyway,
some way to constrain one person and the other person can then move freely or
yeah,
something. Yeah,
I don't like her either. So that also adds to that. But also one that I think a lot of people like, and I can objectively say that it is very beautiful, but it made me feel awkward, like I shouldn't be watching it, was Jaal's romance. Because even though I love the romance side of things, it was so much romance. Like, I don't know I wouldn't be able to contain the nervous giggling if that were me, like being naked with him, pulling you in the water. And he's like, wait, come meet all my family. It was just love bombing. So while I can say, yes, Jaal's a good romance, I also just didn't enjoy that because it was like voyeurism to me. You know, it was making love. It was not sex. But Korra's, on the other hand, great romance scene. Very hot. Also love Korra. So good ones all around.
Interesting. Well, we've got to take a quick break to go thank our patrons, and we've got sort of a planet card today, so stay tuned for that. We'll be right back.
It's a new year, 2025, and you're probably thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How can I make this the best year ever? How am I going to build something for myself? I'm dying to be my own boss, or see if I can turn this business idea I've been kicking around into a reality. But I don't know how to make that happen. Shopify is the key, and let me tell you how. The best time to start your new business is right now. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates. No coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. Shopify makes it easy to manage your growing business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on the important stuff, like growing your business. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Established in 2025. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/redcircle.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this
Lorecast
is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right, here we are. This is the middle of the show. This is where we get to welcome our newest patron, Tynal. Welcome to the Patreon. Thank you for signing up. And we get to shout out our Shepherd tier patrons, Edboy, Kira C, and Lieutenant Tosino. Oh, and William also. Can't forget William. Thank you to those of you who have supported the show on patreon.com/MassEffectLoreCast. And if you want to check everything out over there, there's lots of cool stuff to see. Ad-free episodes, you get stickers or t-shirts, or join us on future patron chats, all of that stuff. Plus, we have to thank those of you who have taken the time to give us a 5-star review and leave us some words. And we have a new one here from Great Britain, from Mad Puppy, who writes, "Information is my weapon, Shepherd. It's good, and these guys provide it. I have played Mass Effect since it came out. I recently completed another playthrough of all 4 games and listened to this podcast alongside the games. Tom and Sam added so much background and depth to the game. Humorous, insightful, and full of interesting information. Give it a listen. I didn't do it in order. I picked the characters and themes I liked, but soon found I was listening to the more obscure lore too." Mad Puppy, thank you so much for taking the time to leave that review. And to everyone else who helps out with the show, rating it on Spotify, sharing it with your friends, all of that stuff. We really do appreciate that. And Sam, it says here you have a planet card, but we'll probably not do it today? Do you want to just do it?
I was planning to skip it for the sake of brevity, but basically Genesis it's had suggested that we cover the planet Venus, since Venus was named after the goddess of love. For those of you who don't know about Venus, it's in our own solar system, and it will crush you if you land on it. And that's pretty much what I have to say about Venus.
Crushing, and anyone can't breathe.
Yep. Venus is a dominatrix of a planet. So
there you go. Thank you for everybody for the support and everything else that you've done in order to keep this show going. We really do appreciate it. All right, let's move on. We've got some more questions. Here we go.
Spit it out, or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
So here, let's continue the talk about the sexual stuff, because but kind of move it in a slightly different direction. Because in Mass Effect, the characters have a definitive sexual orientation. But in other games, it really doesn't seem to matter, or there's more flexibility. Somebody isn't necessarily locked in. They can all be attracted to you as the main character, regardless of any preset seeming identity or anything like that. Is there a version of this that's better than the other? Like, what do you prefer? Are there pros and cons to each of these? What do you think?
There are total pros and cons to defined sexualities, or what we call player sexual. You're attracted to the player. So player sexual versus defined sexualities. For me, and for a lot of people that V and I have talked to, defined sexualities for the win on almost every ground. Defined sexualities bring a different depth to a character. They bring replayability to your video game, for one, because it's like, oh, okay, I played as my first run was a femship, so I was locked out of a few romance options that I could have been interested in because they're available for a male Shep only. Okay, so that means now I'm going to do a male Shep run, so that way I have those options available to me. It also allows for you're the player's sexual identity to be seen, because you can meet a lesbian character, you can meet a bisexual, a pansexual, a gay character, a straight character, and be like, I see a little bit of myself in you because you are a representation of how I am. It's also a way for some people to have those types of experiences for the first time. Testing out and playing with gender identity, sexual identity, orientations in video games is a safe way for people to explore those. If you get to a point where you no longer like it, you don't load up that save, or you go back and you make a different decision. It's really hard to hit the undo button in real life. So being able to do it in a video game is great.
Yeah. Okay. So it seems that you are pro fixed orientation, and that's mm-hmm. where Mass Effect is. Would you change that in any way, or even in slight ways, or do you like it exactly the way it is?
I wouldn't change the defined sexualities in Mass Effect, other than the fact that they deleted some of them in the creation of the game, and I would restore those. Originally, Jack was supposed to be pansexual. Jacob Taylor was supposed to be a bi man. So I would love to see those that were originally planned being in the game. But that's also just keeping within the line of defined sexuality types. And then for my own personal reasons, I wish all aliens were bisexual, because I don't think that they would care what type of sex organs you had.
Especially, that's
a great point.
Yeah.
Why would aliens care about human genders?
Yeah.
Yeah, unless they aligned very, very closely, like coincidentally, we are very similar biologically. But if there's a huge biological difference, then at that point, what's it even really matter?
Well, right. Jen touched on it with how Jack was supposed to be pansexual in Mass Effect 2. And we already know, like, back when Legendary Edition came out, they had an interview with one of the BioWare writers about why that was changed so late in development. And it's because Fox News specifically getting really freaked out over Liara's sex scene in Mass Effect 1, thinking, oh no, children are going to see blue alien sex.
Right, because only children play video games.
Oh, yes. Because and to the uninitiated.
They'll only find that through Mass Effect.
Right. Yeah, to the uninitiated, it looks like, you know, oh no, female exploitation. But it's like, she's not even a lesbian. She's a sorry. They have no gender. They can have sex with whoever and whatever. That's just their biology. So to me, until we have literally not new, like a newsworthy event for a sex scene in a video game. I know this was 2007, 2008 when that came out, but it's like, until we are at a point in our society where it's not a big deal to have all these sexualities be literally represented in a video game, why shouldn't we have them? Because some people, especially back then, found out their own sexuality because they were able to romance someone in Mass Effect or in Dragon Age, you know, and they're represented as characters. Like Jen said, someone could see a lesbian or someone, if everyone's just player sexual, and it doesn't really feel as earned. And I also like the thought of the characters themselves having the agency to choose, not just the whims of the player of, oh, I just gave them enough gifts and talked to them enough times, and now I can have sex with them. It doesn't feel as real as when they have their own sexual identities. And going alongside that, there should also be characters whose sexual identity is one in which they do not want to have sex, even if you want to. So I think a lot of people do like player sexual because they want to be the god of their universe when they play the game. You know, they want to be the center of attention and do whatever they want to do. And I'm sure that has a place, maybe in RPGs especially, because you're role playing. But at the same time, everyone we've talked to pretty much prefers having the characters feel as real as possible, which includes a sexual identity.
Yeah, when you take off,
when you take any of
any
the,
of, oh, I'm bouncing oh, through I'm Sam's through audio.
My board. I hit the button. My bad.
He hit the button. When you take off the guardrails and things no longer match the way they would feel in reality, it makes the game feel automatically more video gamey. It feels fake, right? Like this idea that like everyone I want to romance is going to be into me no matter what. It's so player centric. It's like, oh, well, now you are the main character. Like you would make fun of somebody in real life, expecting the world to just bend to all of your whims. That doesn't feel, that feels like a video game. And that's part of why role-playing games can be so fun, is because they put you in a realistic-ish situation where you get to live somebody else's life and see things through different eyes rather than just this egocentric, everything happens the way I want it to kind of way. But when you actually unpack that a little bit, most games don't give you everything you want. You have to earn them. You have to get better at shooting the bad guys in a shooter. You have to get better at strategizing in a strategy game. In a role-playing game, maybe you have to get better at actually understanding other people and living in the world in a way that makes sense.
I was just going to say, especially in the realm of Mass Effect, I think your reasoning makes a lot of sense, Tom, because Mass Effect is not really about Shepard. When you get into the nitty-gritty about it, Mass Effect is about everyone besides Shepard. Literally everyone else, all of your crew. That's where most of the content is focused on.
Yeah, Shepard's kind of your view into the world.
Exactly. Shepard is your portal through which to view the Mass Effect universe. And Ryder is also your portal too, although they tried to give Ryder, I think, a little bit more personality given some different dialogue options you can pick. But the thing is that I think for the next Mass Effect, when they're making it, if we're saying, you know, should it be player sexual or defined sexuality? For me, I would like to see it be defined sexuality because of the role play aspect, because like Genesis said, it will add replay value, but above all, because it adds a level of depth to characters. If you walk outside your door and you're looking to try and go court someone and you know, find a partner, not everyone is going to be eusexual. That's
right,
just not
right.
going to happen.
In fact, most people won't be. Like,
yes,
the vast majority of people that you come across will not be, unless you're like some sort of famous movie star or something. But
And I say that because I want to be immersed in Mass Effect. You know, if I just wanted to game the system, right? If I wanted to have every character possible romance want to be with my character, then I would, of course, want that. But I'm dealing with that right now in Baldur's Gate. And I love the writing for a lot of the romances in Baldur's Gate. But the fact that literally everyone is hitting on me is a little bit off-putting. And it just kind of cheapens, I guess, my immersion in it. And it cheapens my connection to the character. So for the sake of role-playing, I do want defined sexuality. Now, before anyone jumps down my throat, that doesn't mean that I don't want, you know, other sexualities represented in the game. I think there should be some sexualities like, you know, Suvi, right? I could never romance Suvi. I wanted to romance Suvi, but she's lesbian, and I couldn't in Andromeda. And that's okay. That's good. It's a defined sexuality, right? So I would just like to see that dynamic in the next Mass Effect.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Sam, where else do you want to go before we take the show too long and have to wrap things up? Any other questions you want to hit on?
Yeah, you know, I did want to talk about hot takes when it comes to Mass Effect romances, because I know each of them have their fair share of very, very, perhaps controversial opinions. And Genesis, I think you had told me about yours before. What's your Mass Effect romance hot take?
Okay, so especially for people who have played this game and interacted with the community and just being on a Mass Effect 2 stream for more than 5 minutes, it is always, oh, Jacob Taylor's the worst character out there. I can't believe he cheats on your Shepard. He's the worst romance ever. I'm here in defense of Jacob Taylor going, no, Jacob Taylor is not the worst romance option out there. In fact, the Shepard who romances him is the worst romance option. I cannot stand this femme shep. I think she is psychopathic. And Tom, I gave you a clip of how dark and evil this shepherd sounds.
Yeah, here, listen.
To set this.
Yeah, go ahead, Jen.
To set the scene, this is at Mass Effect 3. You guys had your romance in 2. You're seeing Jacob for the first time in Mass Effect 3. He has told you that he has moved on and is with somebody else right now. He is currently injured and in a hospital-type setting. And she looks around and realizes you're all alone.
If one of us dies here today, I want to know that we said all there was to say.
Come on, Shepard. Did you want me to wait forever?
It's not what I wanted you to do. It's what I want you to do. Remember?
Shepard.
It's just you and me here. No one can see us.
I love you, Shepard. Loved you. Damn it.
Come on, Jacob.
I can't. No.
Because you're happy. You found the meaning of life.
Yeah, I'm happy. And it's out there for you too, when you want it.
It's hard to hear. You're a bastard.
Okay, probably deserve that. I'm sorry.
There's almost like a viciousness in her delivery.
What makes it worse is physically how this looks. He's sitting on a table, and when she goes into that deeper voice, like, we're alone, she gets on her knees in front of him.
Yeah. So you're saying...
And it reminds me of one of my exes, but come on.
So you're saying that people who are all, like, down with Jacob, I've just been ignoring this scene, basically?
Because I don't think any of them actually romanced him and went through this. They just see the internet memes of Jacob cheeps on you and assume that therefore he must be horrible. But no, I that's the proof. This is what the romance is like. Yeah. Shepard's the evil one, not Jacob.
Yeah.
Isn't there a scene in which Shepard can punch Jacob?
Yep. And it's heartbreaking on a couple of different levels, because that same line of I probably deserved that is what he says after you hit him. Yeah. Okay. I probably deserved that. The only people who expect violence in, like, oh, I hurt your feelings and therefore I expect violence to happen against me, are people who have, whose that's happened to in the past. You know, he's been hit before and that line proves it.
Yeah. Oh, it's dark, but yeah, abuse. And that's, unfortunately, people who come from abusive families or relationships then seek more subconsciously. And
yeah.
Well, that is a good take. I mean, it's a hot take probably, but it's also a good take. I think it's a really good perspective on that. A lot of people miss. So
Vervada, what's your Mass Effect romance hot take?
I kind of just shared that with Jen about Jacob, because I had never romanced him and I didn't know those lines until we did his episode for our podcast. And it was really shocking. I guess if you want realism in your romances, like, it's not always pretty or good. It's just also shocking to see how you, the character, could be the bad romance, the bad partner,
especially in canned dialogue. Like, it's one thing if you get to make that choice. Like, if you want to say the really kind of not great thing to your potential partner and you choose each line of dialogue, that's one thing. You're role playing as kind of a jerk or whatever. And sure, Paragon Renegade role play a jerk. Do what you want. It's a video game. But it's another thing for it to be like actual canned scene. Like, you didn't choose those specific words, but now all of a sudden your character is delivering that. Does that make you feel different?
Yeah, I just think it's not a good romance. Obviously he shouldn't cheat, but you don't deserve that. It just feels so like Shepard's a predator basically in that moment. And it's very gross. I don't like it at all. I don't really think it should be a hot take if you see the whole thing. You know, it should be like, oh yeah, this actually, you shouldn't romance Jacob. Just let him go, be happy with, what was her name? I can't even remember. The doctor that he has a baby with.
Bryn.
Bryn. Bryn. Better.
Yeah, there you go. Just let him go be with her. There's plenty of more aliens in the universe, the galaxy, really.
Interesting points. This has been a lot of fun talking with both of you, Sam.
I've been trying to think if I have a Mass Effect romance hot take, and at this point, I want to say that my Mass Effect romance hot take is just romancing Ashley, because, man, do people jump down my throat about that one. There's a lot of jokes to be made there. I won't make any of them, but the thing is, people jump down my throat about those on social media, but you know what, Tom? Of all of the individual character episodes we've ever done, you know who has the most views on YouTube?
Who?
It's Ashley.
Ashley, yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's the Ashley
yeah.
one where we talked about her romance.
Yeah.
So some of y'all motherfuckers are pretending.
Her episode for us is one of our top ones, too, where you came on to talk about her and defend her. People really want to hear the hot takes, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's what drives clicks on YouTube, is saying something controversial. If you put a very controversial line in a thumbnail or a title, you're going to get more clicks. So
fair. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's the hate clicks as well as the love clicks. But let's finish the episode on love. Each of your favorite romances in Mass Effect before we wrap up.
I can't pick. I have my top three: Garrus, Caden, Jack. I can't live without them.
Okay. You can't pick one. If you were like a gun to your head, or desert island, like your shepherd gets stranded on a planet, you can only have one with you. There's no like, absolutely had to pick one.
Is it my bro Shep or my fat Shep? Is it Mass Effect 2? Is it Mass Effect 3? No, which, Tom, I can't.
Which one?
Pick.
Which one's your can? Who is your more canon Shep? This could be just too difficult of a question. Maybe it's just not possible. That's fine.
Fem Shep.
Okay, Fem Shep. And Fem Shep would pick, having been through all three games,
Caden and Garrus.
Two of them. We've narrowed it down a little bit. Okay. Right.
If you want me to say Garrus, I will say Garrus, but I'm like, my brain is going, but what about Caden and what about Jack? And that's why I need a polycule. I'm sorry.
Well, I didn't mean to break your heart or anything, but it's interesting that they have that much of an effect on you. And I'm sure lots of other people who play these games, right? That it is that hard to choose. That's pretty cool.
They're all so different. And for so many different reasons is why I love them.
Yeah. Vervada, do you have
a favorite? I do have a favorite. As much as I love Garrus, I think Thane is my favorite because he made such an impact on me. I mean, other than Solus, there's really no romance in a game that ends with you breaking up or a death in Thane's case. I love the fact that part of your relationship is learning about his wife. If who died is meeting his son. It's just such a unique dynamic that you don't really see in games other than Thane. And it obviously is a star-crossed lovers bit because Thane dies, and that's super, super sad. But almost every shepherd dies at the end of Mass Effect 3, unless you do things very well and you get that final little breath. Maybe shepherd's alive. But it's very comforting to me to think that my Fem Shep gave up her life to save the galaxy and met up with Thane across the sea. It's a beautiful image. So I love Thane's romance.
And it's true to a lot of romance stories or movies with these like tragic endings, right? Like star-crossed lovers, but Titanic, you know, yeah, only one
we,
of them
we love
survives.
Us a star-crossed lover.
Yeah. 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 And it's interesting that you point that out, that like we don't get more than just that. Like there are many characters, but that's the only one that plays out in that way. Yeah. All right, Sam, any other questions?
You know, I just thought of what my Mass Effect hot take for romances is. Tally's overrated. That's my Mass Effect hot take for romances. Tally's overrated, and the amount of people that I've heard talk about her like she's a child or a dog is disturbing.
You can reach Sam on Twitter at N7Legend if you'd like to send him any comments about this. Hot take.
It's disturbing. Tally, best girl. She's an adult. And Maybe you should act like it. I don't know. That's my romance hot take for Mass Effect.
Nice, nice. All right. Well, we need to wrap this up. Thank you so much, Jen and Vravada. Thank you for being here. It's always interesting to get your takes on things. Clearly, you are the experts on this field. You've been doing your show for a long time. You've experienced so many of these different video game romances, and you do have a lot of really interesting insight. So thank you for being here. Let's start with Jen. Jen, is there anything else you want to share before we head out?
Yeah, the Two Girls, One Chip podcast has been going strong for about 2.5 years. We have covered all 3 Mass Effect games. Each character has their own specific episode based on what game we're talking about. So go give them a listen. I'm also on the Cyberpunk Lorecast, where we talk everything cyberpunk from the original TTRPG all the way up to the newest Phantom Liberty expansion.
Awesome. Yeah, go check that stuff out. If you're looking for links, you can just search on whatever podcast you're listening to this on, or go to robotsradio.net. You'll find links on there as well. Vervada, it's also been super fun catching up with you. It's been a little while, but I'm glad that we got to hang out. Anything else you want to share?
Nope. Just that currently on our show, we're talking about Baldur's Gate 3 characters. So if you like them, be sure to tune in, because we're talking about them now.
Yeah. I mean, lots of people playing Baldur's Gate, so, and mm-hmm. lots of steamy romance stuff in that game, for sure. All right, Sam, anything you want to share?
No, that's pretty much it. You know, I'm continuing to stream my personal canon playthrough in Mass Effect 2. That's every Saturday after the month of February this year, in the year of our Lord 2024. I will be streaming more per week. I'm going to try and work in a consistent second stream of the week with some Baldur's Gate, doing like a Twitch viewer's choice thing where I let them decide all of the dialogue choices and whatnot. Nice. But yeah, you can find me on Twitch and Twitter at N7 The Legend.
Awesome. Yeah, go check out everybody's stuff. There's so many things to consume, but if any of those things sound appealing to you, go check it out. You won't regret it. And also, you can find my shows, the other shows that I do, and everyone else's shows on the network at robotsradio.net. Thanks for being here, everyone. Chat, thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Stay safe out there, and romance carefully, I guess. I don't know what the tagline for this one is, but have a wonderful Valentine's Day. We'll see you later.
Thanks for tuning in to the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Hey, football fans. BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice, up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
What is Dax? Are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen. Yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for
in Dax's domain. We see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them.
All of them. Value surge. Trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell.
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.